very pleased today to have with us Professor Zhang Weizhen, who's an associate professor at Jinan University in China. He was actually at the Woodrow Wilson Center before coming to us. He spent maybe a month, 2 months with us. A short period of time with us, unfortunately. Very short period of time, but we've been very happy to have him here. And so we're pleased to have his presentation today, and I'll just turn it over to you then.
Okay, thank you, Professor McCall. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, you all. I'm very happy to live here, to do research here. I want to live longer. But Chinese government does not permit, so I will go back soon. Mm-hmm. So, but if I have time, I would like to go back, come back. Yeah. Thank you. And this is the name of my presentation today is the U.S. Policy of American Armed Forces in Qingdao from 1945 to 1949. This is one part of my article. The article has finished in Chinese. One professor helps me for the translation into English. I'll try to put it into the Journal of Cold War in Harvard University. Thank you for you. I would like to have more suggestions for that presentation. Okay. So, I will tell a story in the style of the story. So, according to the time. The first is the background of American Armed Forces stationed in Qingdao. Qingdao has a very important strategic position in China, in modern China, the early period of establishment of Qingdao was in 1890s. Until now, it is still very important. It is the mother port of Chinese North Sea Fleet. So when did the American Armed Forces station in Qingdao? So the time is after World War II, after the surrender of the Japanese. The U.S. warships appeared in the port of Qingdao on September 19th. This is the earliest time for that. And after that, the Marine Corps landed. The time is that the 6th Division of American Marine Corps landed at the port of Qingdao on October 9th. There are two concepts, Navy and Marine Corps. They are different. But what are the relations between them? Before 1947, before January 1947, they are separate. They are dependent. They are independent. They do themselves. But after January 1947, Marshall mission was over at that time. So from that time on, the Marine Corps the Marine Corps was under the order of Navy at the time. Yeah, from there. So by the end of October 1945, the number of American Armed Forces stationed in Qingdao amounted to 20,000. This is the biggest number. From that time on, it decreased. Yeah. So this is a picture for the 6th Division of American Marine Corps landed at the port of Qingdao. All the pictures are from the municipal archives of Qingdao. It's also my hometown. So, this is picture of the headquarters of American Navy in Qingdao. And now, it was gone. So, you know, after the occupation of Qingdao by CCP, it became the property of China, CCP. So, this is the former site of American military campus on University Road. So now there are no camps. Yeah. So why did the U.S. government choose Qingdao but not other ports in China as the home port of 7th Fleet after World War II? Most important of all, Qingdao, I mentioned a few minutes ago, Qingdao was a place with important strategic value at the time. So, first, the port of Qingdao was large and deep, which was a natural commercial and military port. From the Qing dynasty, it was the natural commercial and military port, and Germany occupied. Japanese occupied. And second, Qingdao's communication was very convenient. You can go to many important cities of China by plane, by railway, by sea. Yeah. So it's very convenient. Third, Qingdao's strategic influence could expand to USSR, Soviet Union, North and South Korea, Japan, and the Philippines, etc. So it's very important. So this is picture for the position of Qingdao in East Asia. Yeah. So you can see the important strategic position of Qingdao. And there are many other reasons for the U.S. government to choose Qingdao as the home port of South Fleet. So, for example, the climate of Qingdao was very mild, especially in summer. When other places in China and in neighbor countries are very hot, but Qingdao is very cool. Yeah, so, usually, the U.S. Navy stayed there until in winter. Only in winter, the Navy will go to the Philippines. You know, in winter, Qingdao was a little cold. Yeah, but not so cold. Yeah. But the Philippines, very warm. So the Marine Corps usually enjoyed life there. And Qingdao was a former colony. This another reason. Was a former colony of Germany with the style of Western world. You can see that all the houses built by Germany with the Western style. So for the Western people, they would be very accustomed to this style. Okay, I can show that. This is a picture of Bathing Beach, close to Zhanqiao, pier of Qingdao. Yeah. So this is a signal of Qingdao. Those are the buildings in Qingdao. They are all built by Germany, with a Western style. This is the former site of Germany, the German governor house in Qingdao. Now it became the consultative consultative committee of Qingdao people. So, and now the building in Qingdao. Yes. And what the next? What are the goals of the U.S. government want to achieve in Qingdao? Yeah. First, to assist China in receiving the surrender of Japanese armed forces and repatriation of Japanese forces and civilians after World War II. This is the first reason for that. And this is a picture. General Li Yanyan is the highest commander of National forces in Shandong province at that time. This is a ceremony of receiving the surrender of Japanese armed forces in Qingdao. So the picture also from the municipal archives of Qingdao. These Japanese soldiers were repatriated. So the second reason is the implementation of public law 512. This law was published by House and Senate of U.S. The content is that to help China to strengthen its navy, to give ships to China to train the soldiers. This is the second reason. And third, containment of Chinese Communist Party, CCP. You know, after the U.S. Marines landed in Qingdao, before that, the CCP almost occupied Qingdao. You know, the national list forces at that time were weak compared with CCP. But after the Marine Corps landed, the CCP withdrew. So this is the reason for that. Fourth, constraint of USSR's influence in northwestern China. So you know, according to the arrangement of Yalta Conference, all the northeastern China became the influential sphere of USSR, and USSR rented or occupied Lushun and Dalian. So this is those are the two important posts in northeastern China. So the armed forces in Qingdao played a role for constraining USSR's influence in northeastern China. But the names are different. You know, maybe you are familiar with Arthur. So this is Lü Shun, in Chinese Lü Shun. Fifth, to give assistance to Marshall's mission in China. You know, at the end of 1945, Marshall came to China to mediate the conflicts between CCP and KMT to force them to form one government. So in January 1946, the military mediation enforcement was established in Peiping, and numbers from three sides, KMT, CCP, and the US. The US Marines in Qingdao provided the logistic support for the MME and protected the allies of Qingdao, Tianjin, and Peiping line. So after that, there would be an attack for the CCP attacked US Marines on this route. George, this is a picture of George C. Marshall. This is a shoulder emblem of MME. But the legitimacy of American armed forces was questioned not long after this station, not after they landed at Qingdao. Because you know, when the Japanese were repatriated, so maybe to some extent it's over. Especially after the finishment of Marshall mission, it has no reasons to station in China. So how can they station at the same time USSR question the legitimacy in UN and in the Moscow Conference of Foreign Ministers, but at the same time USSR did the bad things in northeastern China. So you know, people protested at the same time, US and USSR. But you know, the CCP's propaganda was very strong. So most of the people supported CCP at that time. So CCP challenged this legitimacy in China by organizing the anti-American student movements. So at that time. The case of Shencheng, you know, rape of Shencheng, not clear whether she was raped or not. So, and this is a picture of anti-American student movements in Peiping, this is anti-American student movements in Shanghai. The U.S. government felt pressure on that, so they asked the Chinese government to declare that all the armed force in China was legal. So, and the Chinese government agreed. On September 3rd, 1947, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Wang Shijie, at that time, declared that all the U.S. armed forces in China was at the request of Chinese government, and American forces would withdraw as soon as the Chinese government or the U.S. government thought that they should withdraw. So the U.S. U.S. armed forces in Qingdao gained legitimacy to some extent, just to some extent, because you know there was no formal treaty of stationing Qingdao at that time. So this is the problem for that. It's not like the Guantanamo Bay base. For the Guantanamo Bay base, there is the treaty between the US and Cuba. So this is a problem. This is a difference. So the second part is the most important part of that policy decision-making process of staying or withdrawing from Qingdao. Before 1948, there's no problem for that. Because, you know, before that, to some extent, KMT occupied Qingdao firmly. So CCP's forces were weak at that time. But after 1948, the CCP became stronger and stronger. They launched attack against the KMT forces around Qingdao. So in April 1948, the communists occupied Weixian. The name is Weifang. It's in the central of Shandong province. It is also in the center of line, one railway from Qingdao to Jinan, the capital of Shandong province. It's in the middle. The Weixian is in the middle. So, in another word, CCP cut the railway into two parts. So it's very serious for KMT. So and at the same time, the U.S. government had to rethink the policy of stationing in Qingdao. So this is a picture for that. The Shandong province is in the east of that. It's very close to Korea. Yeah, so this is that. So there are many factors affecting the decision-making. So, in early 1947, the Truman Doctrine and the Marshall Plan were presented one by one. So the situation of Cold War. So the first factor is the Cold War between U.S. and USSR. Became more and more serious. At the same time, with the instability of China and compared with Japan, the stability of Japan. So the U.S. government began to change its policy toward East Asia. it wanted to replace China with Japan, to make Japan replace China as its most important partner at that time. Yes. So the Yan Wen, the strategic position of China declined. So at the same time, the Qingdao's strategic position declined. Yeah, correspondingly. So, and this kind of Truman. So this is the very important person, George F. Kennan. He played a great role on the decision making of US policy toward East Asia. He paid attention to Japan more than China. Yeah. So this, which affected the US government, which affected Truman. So this is for that. The National Security Council of US played a big role in the policy making. So there are four, there are totally four files related to Qingdao, withdraw armed forces from Qingdao. They are NSC 11, NSC 11/1, 2/3. There are four files for that. So the first file is very important. This is the basis for the other files. So on May 3rd, 1948, the commander of United States Naval Forces in the Western Pacific. So after 1949, the name changed to 7th Fleet, as we are familiar for that. Before that, it called the United States Naval Forces in the Western Pacific. The commander is name is Oscar C. Badger. His manuscripts are in Navy Yard, but unfortunately, it was closed. it is open to the officials, but not to the public. So I feel very sad for that. So maybe I will come back. he sent a telegram to the chief of naval operation, Louis E. Denfield. It's the leader. He's the leader of Badger, and made four alternative plans on this issue. So one is to assist nationalist forces in defense of the city and essential suburban facilities. This is one. To assist, just assist, helps. But B is different. Defend itself. Defend installations essential to US without other local participation. Without KMT for forces. Yeah. And this is second. C, prompt evacuation of US personnel and forces with covering actions by the US forces only as necessary. It's totally different. Yeah. Withdrawal. And D, the fourth, evacuation now of US shore establishments and non-combatants. Civilians. Withdraw civilians first, then the forces. And retaining the US forces afloat in the vicinity. There are four alternative choices. So this is the basis for all the other files related to Qingdao. And Badger himself thought A was most advisable, but without a formal understanding of Chinese government, it would be a question for the legitimacy. China is not the colony, so this is the problem for that. Then Denfield sent the telegram to the Secretary of Defense, James Forrestal, who submitted it to NSC, National Security Council, on May 21st, and it became NSC 11 on May 24th. 4 months later, Chinese Civil War situation is the very important factor affecting the policy decision. Yeah. And Jinan, the capital of Shandong province, was occupied by CCP. Only 8 days is the shock of for the KMT and the US government. Only 8 days it was occupied by CCP. So, and US worried about the situation in Qingdao. So you know they are in the same province. It's close to something. On October 14th, Acting Secretary of State Robert A. Lowitt sent a letter to Executive Secretary of USC, Soros, recommending that Beijing should at once take steps to effect in an orderly manner of evacuation of Navy. Yeah. Navy dependence in Qingdao as possible. The liquidation to decrease or transfer of shipboard of shore-based activities. Maybe it is sounds like the C alternative choice. It's very likely. So at the same time, steps should be taken in the direction of Department of Navy to strengthen Beijing's defensive position in Qingdao, to cover, it means to cover the withdrawal from Qingdao. Yeah. On October 19th, the fire of ASC 11/1 was formed according to the content of the letter. Then at the end of November, the situation of Chinese Civil War changed greatly. The nationalist forces, you know, in Huaihai campaign, in one very important city, Xuzhou, in the north of Jiangsu province, very close to Shandong province, was seized and then occupied by CCP. So this means the over of the campaign. It looked that KMT's failure was around the corner. So this it was a very important campaign between KMT and CCP. In this context, the US expedited the evacuation of American civilians from Qingdao. In order to cover, it sent troops from Guam to Qingdao. So this is, yeah. For the Chinese government, more Marines, more Marines coming to Qingdao, they would feel very happy for that. But at the same time, they saw that the Marines, withdrew civilians from Qingdao. They worried about that. They worried that one day in the future, all the American armed forces will withdraw. Without the protection of US armed forces, they would never protect the city. So, this is the fact at that time. They depended on the armed forces. It is interesting that Department of State discussed the possibility of control Qingdao. It's very strange, because in the public, the U.S. Department of State declared that China has already gained the independence from 1943. So they would never send troops or control Qingdao. But in secret, they discussed the possibility of control Qingdao. So in this context, Qingdao was very important for them. Okay. But there are many disadvantages for the US to control Qingdao. They know. Firstly, control Qingdao by US lacked the legitimacy of the national government. And legitimacy by law. And at the same time, the national government would get less popular support. So the Chinese government, the Chinese people would criticize or blame the national government for giving rights to US or in Chinese 美国, Secondly, it would be a heavy burden for the U.S. to control Qingdao. There are many people in Qingdao, and more refugees came to Qingdao during the war. So it is a very big burden for the economy. Yeah, so, and there are many spices of CCP. So it is a very big problem for that. So it's a big burden, anyway. And then, after that, Jiang Jieshi, Chiang Kai-shek, changed the American idea of controlling Qingdao. You know, Jiang wanted to withdraw his forces from Qingdao. So at that time, U.S. government had no reason to control Qingdao. So, and yeah, the U.S. government heard that Chinese Navy training base and facility wanted to withdraw from Qingdao to Taiwan and Amoy, Xiamen, in Chinese, Xiamen. On December 14th, Lowit sent a memorandum to Cyrus, which recommended as follows. One, a badger should proceed energetically to evacuate dependence and surplus material, and to liquidate shore-based activities to withdraw it. Second, the existing program of training Chinese Navy should be suspended, not stopped. Yeah, it is. The U.S. look and see. Yeah. And three, American naval forces should not be established at that time either on Taiwan or in Qingdao. Yeah. In Xiamen. Yeah. To wait and see. So, on December 15th, the memorandum became the file of NSC 11/2, the DC, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the head of the military. Yeah. So discussed the file and recommended that if the decision of withdrawing all the American armed forces from Qingdao was made, the suitable time to announce withdrawing forces would be the early announcement of Chinese Navy Naval Training Center moving out of Qingdao. But it's a problem. So maybe it's very late for the U.S. Armed forces to withdraw when the Chinese declared that it would withdraw its forces from Qingdao. So it's a problem. Anyway, memorandum became the NSC 11/2. Yeah. And then the NSC 11/3 was formed on December 23rd. So it rectified the NSC 11/2 on time. It decided itself. In the NSC 11/3, it decided itself for time to withdraw. Yeah. Not depend on the Chinese declaration of forces. Yeah. So this is different. So, and the last process for the armed forces, implementation of withdrawal from Qingdao. There are three stages of implementation of withdrawal from Qingdao. First stage was from the end of December 1948 to mid February 1949. So I will tell briefly. At that time, the U.S. government withdrew its forces quickly, greatly. So, but after the mid February 1949. Things changed. Why change? Because you know, Jiang Jieshi, Chiang Kai-shek resigned at that time, and Li Dongren became the acting president of China. So Li Dongren launched the peaceful attempt. So negotiated with CCP. So Li Dongren asked support to let the U.S. armed forces sedition continue to station in Qingdao for the negotiation, for his negotiation position with CCP. So U.S. slowed down the speed of withdrawing armed forces at that time. But it lasted only several months. And after May, things changed. You know, on May the 3rd, 1949. So before that, the negotiation failed. The negotiation failed at the end of April. And on May the 3rd, 1949, the CCP launched a war to occupy Qingdao. So in this context, the U.S. government withdrew its armed forces quickly, quickly again. So this is... So this is the picture of campaign of crossing Yangtze River.
Yeah.
And on April 23rd, 1949, the Nanjing was occupied by CCP. So they dispatched for occupied Nanjing president office. And it's very strange. Before 2004, the flag is the red, the national flag of People's Republic of China. Yeah. Before 2004, the flag, you can see the flag ahead of the president office is the red star flag. And after 2004, it became zero, no flag. So this is the change for them. Wow. The idea of that is very interesting.
So they removed the flag from the picture?
No. No flag. They withdrew the red. They take them. Yeah. So, but they will never put the ROC's flag. So just no flag. Yeah. So at the same time, the CCP got the news from underground party members. So it's very strong for the CCP to get secret news that the U.S. armed forces in Qingdao would withdraw on April 25th. It got news from one lady named Wang Jinrong. Yeah, she was in appearance. She was a dancing girl at that time. There are many dancing girls at that time. In fact, they are the spouses of CCP. So, you know, my grandfather was a policeman in Qingdao at that time. She met with many dancing girls. Asked him about many news from the national government of Qingdao. So, but maybe he knows little at that time. So, then the Central Military Commission of CCP. And the head is Mao Zedong. He sent a top secret telegram retained by Mao Zedong to Shandong military area commander and agreed to attack Qingdao with a threat in order to force the national nationalist forces to withdraw. And at the same time, he asked the soldiers not to attack the U.S. armed forces. In this context, he's very careful of that. Yeah, to not attack. Yeah. So then the war, a war was around the corner. So. This is a telegram written by Mao Zedong. This copy. The original file is in the CCP archives in Beijing, but it's very difficult for the normal scholars to go into it, to search. Only the officials maybe. But this is a copy from the CCP archives. It was in Qingdao. I take a picture for that. So. Yeah, it's more known, more known writing. That's the stage, yeah, from early May to so then they occupied the PRA marching on downtown Qingdao, this picture, yeah. They occupied Qingdao on January 2nd with after the withdrawal of US armed forces. US armed forces planned to withdraw before that on May the 25th, but the commander of nationalist forces of Qingdao, Liu Anqi, he asked the U.S. armed forces to continue to stay for several days, two or three days. Before May the 25th, time is limited for him to withdraw national forces from Qingdao. The armed forces of U.S. station, continued station, until on June the 2nd. After withdrawal, CCP occupied Qingdao. Oh, in this world, in this context, the nationalist forces withdrew without loss. It was success to some extent for the nationalist forces. You know, in the other cities, the nationalist forces surrendered or destroyed by CCP. Only in this city, almost without loss. So this is US armed forces played a role in that. So the this picture for American troops withdrawing from Qingdao. So the now influences of US armed forces in Qingdao. First, the stationing of American armed forces stimulated the development of the local economy, especially for entertainment. You know, more dancing clubs, cafes, restaurants, bars, and theaters appeared after the end of 1945. They benefited a lot from forces. The forces also became the indispensable and major customers of the city rickshaw pullers. Now there are no rickshaw pullers, but at that time there are many rickshaw, huangbao che in Chinese, yeah, huangbao che fu, yeah. So, but there are many conflicts between that. But it's not always the fault of U.S. armed forces. Sometimes they are the fault of the rickshaw pullers. I searched the documents in municipal archives of Qingdao. I found that. Yeah. Second, there are many conflicts between U.S. American armed forces and the local civilians, which stimulated the nationalism of China. It was the reason for the armed forces to withdraw from Qingdao. But for the most of the scholars, they thought that it was the fault of U.S. armed forces, and they thought that it was very serious for the conflicts. But some people had a different idea, especially, for example, my grandfather. My grandfather was a policeman at that time in Qingdao. He thought that it's not the matter, it's not the fact. It's not very serious for the conflicts. The police, the military police controlled the forces. They do not permit them to do bad things at that time. So another fact, they are fewer, to some extent, they are fewer soldiers, U.S. soldiers in Qingdao. So he thought it's not the fact for that. Unfortunately, my grandfather had many letters and pictures related to Qingdao, to U.S. armed forces. But unfortunately, during the great Cultural Revolution of China, he burned all the pictures and letters for the protection of himself and his families. Yeah. For my mother, my grandfather is my mother's father. Yeah. So this is a picture for my grandfather and I. For, yeah, so. And third, the forces affected the process of Chinese Civil War. Yeah, so this is a fact for that. So, however, Qingdao was occupied, yeah, so for that. And American armed forces, when we withdraw, it affected US Consul General was driven out of Qingdao half a year later. Of that, it is affection of that, a withdrawal of armed forces. So, yeah, this is the former site of US Consulate General in Qingdao. So, yeah. Now it was occupied by the official. Yeah, so, occupied. The implication, the last implications, the US policy toward Qingdao is the episode of US policy toward China. So it's the same thing for that. But on the other side, the U.S. wanted to maintain its influence in China since the American missions came to China in the 19th century. So for U.S., the armed force in Qingdao is the substantial influence in China, but withdraw no influence. This is over for my presentation. Sorry for so long time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Do you have questions or comments, Eric? And everybody, please identify yourself, actually. That's the general rules. Everybody identify themselves.
Hi, Eric Sesporn, GW. I guess former grad student now, doing one course here. But the initial transfer between the Japanese and the U.S. and the ROC, I mean, can you go into more detail? You know, the ROC troops were there before? Were they airlifted in? I mean, the repatriation process, were there any problems with property? Was there some sort of commission maybe set up, you know, with ROC and Japanese? I'm just wondering how that worked. And then also, with the training aspect, was there, I think it was the Naval Academy School was set up there. Was there institutions established, or was it just sort of, you can come on our ships and we'll show you how things work? I mean, what was the sort of structure of training? How did that work?
Okay.
Sorry, two questions.
Okay. I would like to answer your question. And regarding the first question, you mean the repatriation? How the transfer of Japan and China to replace? You mean replace China? So, in the presentation, Canada played a great role on decision making of that. The transfer of U.S. East Asian policy. At that time, Canada thought that Canada presented the idea in his memoirs. When China, when enemy China, when enemy China friendly to U.S. not better than when friendly Japan. I don't know how to express it. You know, anyway, Canada think that China is not very important, even with armed forces and be unfriendly to U.S. Even China was unfriendly to U.S. It doesn't matter. But for Japan with armed forces and unfriendly to U.S., it is a serious thing. So in a word, he paid more attention to Japan than China. This is the idea of connect. So
in Qingdao, though, did the Americans take over directly the Japanese areas, or did the Kuomintang first take it and then the Americans?
Yeah, first Kuomintang.
First Kuomintang.
There are forces close to Qingdao. In one mountain close to Qingdao, Laoshan. Yeah, it's very, very close to Qingdao. The Kuomintang, the KMT armed forces fought there and hide themselves there to like the CCP to attack Japanese from time to time, but not fought formally. So at that time, they marched on Qingdao at first, and then fewer soldiers.
But you said the CCP almost occupied Qingdao by that time.
Yeah, it's very dangerous for that.
They fought each other.
Yeah, and CCP was very strong for that. And Chen Yi said in face of U.S. generals, it doesn't matter for the KMT soldiers. Yeah, I will occupy Qingdao in several days. Chen Yi, the very famous general, for that. Yeah, so in this context, the U.S. armed forces played a great role for the helping nationalist forces to occupy Qingdao.
That's very interesting because we all know the U.S. government, they afraid of the CCP or the intervening the Chinese Civil War, but we can see the CCP also afraid of the U.S. forces. So what if American U.S. government fully intervened in this fire? That's very interesting. What would be the result?
In fact, it intervening at the Civil War with China, but in the appearance, U.S. declared, oh, I just helped the nationalist forces to accept the surrender of Japanese, to repatriate them. So this is legal for that. So this is a fact for that. And
Training question.
Try to set up a navy, a school. I mean, I know the U.S. had a lot of training programs with the Chinese military, but mostly, the Air Force is very popular. But maybe that's because the U.S. training was in Las Vegas, so maybe more attractive than Annapolis.
The same for the naval and the naval forces.
Yeah, but did it really come too much? Because the navy's always much smaller.
Yeah, although smaller, and the Chinese government established the Academy of Navy. Itself established, and then the U.S. government sent the Naval Advisory Group to Qingdao at that time. So it played a great role for the helping training. The Chinese soldiers, the Navy soldiers for that, at that time. So, and then, regarding the repatriation, the Chinese government repatriated the Japanese forces and civilians. Yeah. They played a very good role for that. But with assistance of U.S. armed forces, so, there are less ships for the Chinese four forces, so it must have the help of U.S. So this and the second question for this.
Lillian Willens. I'm not a graduate of GW, but Boston University, and my connection, well, as I told you earlier, I was born and raised in Shanghai, China. I have two very brief questions. One, I pointed out to you on April 6, 1947, the first time Chinese, guerrilla, killed Marines in Tangu before in Korea. So I'm curious, that early, 47, how come the Navy or the U.S. government didn't think of withdrawing that time, that early? It's 47.
April 47.
And the raid on U.S. Supply Depot at Tangu. and I'm surprised that they left that late. And they're leaving that late, June 2. That's northern China. Shanghai is south, and the CCP, the PLA, walked in on May 25th. So I'm just curious, why did they leave this late? You know, leaving there, and then also this, you would think right away there would be uproar in the United States. The Marines were killed, 6th Marine Regiment, and nothing happened. I'm just curious.
And actually, there is an article written by Yang Kuisong, who is a very famous...
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Incident.
Yeah, about this incident.
The attack.
Yeah.
And you have it in English?
No, I don't think so. I have a Chinese version.
I see.
If you want to know more, I
speak
Chinese. His article was published in China, but there's a brief introduction of this article.
Yeah.
So you can search online for that.
I know, but I'm surprised that the U.S. did not respond to this. I mean, this was an attack.
Respond for that?
Yeah.
Not respond for that? They responded for that.
They did.
They did respond for that.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a big thing.
Yeah.
U.S. government paid attention to the lives of the soldiers. So they responded for that. But at last, they came to compromise
because
for that.
There is a confusion about who fired the first.
Yeah.
And but actually, afterwards, the truth is the CCP, there are some garrison or like the civilian soldier, they fired the first and toward the U.S. Marine Corps.
That's typical guerrilla warfare of the
guerrilla.
Guerrilla force.
So.
The situation is that Mao Zedong and other leaders of CCP were very unhappy for the U.S. armed forces. They thought that they helped the KMT for the Civil War. So, this is from the early beginning of 1946. So, it affected by also by USSR. USSR withdrew its forces from northeastern China in early 1946. So the CCP thought, it has no burden for criticizing the US armed forces. You know, before that, how to criticize only US, but USSR solution armed forces in China. So, and at the same time, the USSR criticized U.S. To station armed forces in China, in UN, in Moscow Conference of Foreign Ministers. So, and after that, the Civil War broke formally. Yeah. So, in this context, the hatred for the U.S. soldiers were very high among the CCP. So, and for but the leader, the top leaders, for example, for Mao Zedong, maybe would not let the soldiers to attack U.S. armed forces. But you know, the lower the generals and soldiers, maybe can't control themselves.
Yeah.
They would attack U.S. armed forces at first. So maybe in Anping or in Tanggu and Shanghai and other many places, instant attack U.S. armed forces. Maybe it's the first CCP fought attacked first.
Yeah.
I think.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, my name is Ian. I'm a Chinese and economics major here. So my question is, after the U.S. defeated Japan in September 1945, how long did it take for all the Japanese forces in China to surrender to Chinese or American forces in China? Were there any remnants of the Japanese that just refused to surrender in China?
Probably not.
No.
Maybe several cases. For example, in North in Manchuria, not Eastern China, there are several cases, mm-hmm. so five to not stop, but most of the places in China stopped quickly, mm-hmm. and then surrounded maybe at the end of 1945.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. So over, but maybe it's a long process for the repatriation.
Mm-hmm.
It hadn't finished until January 1947.
Oh.
Yeah, long time. It affected much for the Civil War. Anyway, it affected.
And were there a lot of instances of locals getting retribution against the Japanese during the repatriation?
Not in China.
You know, the fought between civilians, Chinese civilians and the Japanese forces, they were.
Not in Shanghai.
Oh, not in Shanghai.
Yeah.
No, not in Shanghai.
Yeah.
But in the North China.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Many. It's the maybe it's the reason for the CCP, so for that. They wanted to occupy the cities.
I'm doing a research on the anti-American movement in 1948, and my research, shows maybe the CCP didn't want to occupy the city at all, because the they always hide themselves from the. From the public, and they use the underground party members, like doing like propaganda things. Like, but their power or strength are at that time were significantly limited, and they don't have such a purpose to occupy the cities, but their strategy may be. They try to do anything they can, and to maintain their force in cities instead of occupying cities, and they try to like maintain their force and after those cities occupied by their armed force, they can implement their influence from the underground force.
To some extent, you are right. But after the surrender of Japanese, the CCP also declared that we deserve for the receiving surrender of the Japanese. We fought against the Japanese. So we can contribute to the success of the war.
In a lot of Chinese cities, especially major cities like Shanghai or Beijing.
Oh, so you mean cities? Oh, big cities.
Yeah.
Oh, big cities very difficult.
Yeah, their influence are difficult. So maybe they don't have such a plan or intention to occupy those cities. So
I think there's two issues. Two issues. One is a strategy about what to occupy permanently. So countryside, cities, what areas, that's a different planning process. But accepting the surrender of the Japanese, that's a separate issue in some ways, because whenever possible, the CCP wanted to accept the surrender of those troops to get the guns, right? The armament. Even doing that doesn't necessarily mean they would occupy that place where the Japanese are. They just want to accept the surrender. And that's where the conflict happened, because the Japanese were ordered only to surrender to national forces. So in some places, there's actually conflict. The Japanese are ordered to fight, resist surrendering to the communists, and then there are struggles.
You can read my book, I don't know the Japanese Jin Jing Wu Fu, the vice chief staff of the Japanese in North China. Jin Jing Wu Fu memoirs. It already been translated into Chinese. You can read that. He described the conflict. You can get some idea from that. So.
Oh.
Well, we've kind of run out of time. A very interesting discussion. I want to thank you so much. I think it's an interesting topic. I'm getting very interested in this myself now, so I think it's a good topic. So thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
If people still have other questions, I'm sure you'd be happy to answer other ones.
Would you like to copy those?